Osiris.
Hi, this is Mimi with Fruition, and the podcast you are listening to is part of the Osiris Network. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Sign up for the newsletter at osirispod.com to stay in the loop.
Hey everybody, it's RJ from HF Pod. We're going to get into a review of all four nights of Vegas with our guest Brian. Just a quick heads up, he was at the airport traveling back from Vegas. There, the first 5 minutes or so, there's some background casino airport noise, but it gets cleared up pretty quickly. So just wanted to give you a heads up about that. And want to let you know that we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. We're going to do some sort of back to basics HF Pod in between, you know, the end of fall tour and the beginning of the New Year's run. So we hope that everyone's enjoying what they're hearing, and send us thoughts, feedback, etc. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't yet. We look forward to hearing from you, and thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy this conversation and the music that we have here with Revving Up Vegas. So thanks again. Keep on rocking. Hey, everybody. This is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is a quick-ish hit. I'm talking with Brian Brinkman from Beyond the Pond, who is calling in from the Las Vegas airport on his way home after four nights in Vegas. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, RJ. Thanks for having me on, man. I am doing fantastic right now.
Yeah, so we're going to run through each of the four shows. We're going to do a little bit of discussion and then play some clips from each night. And Brian, we got to see the first two shows somewhat together. We saw each other after the shows and in between the second night. But the first night was a pretty crazy show, obviously, with the cover. But also, like, we should talk about the first and third sets too, because there was a lot of long jams and a lot of sort of, you know, interesting song selections and stuff. I mean, we talked about this a little bit on our Couch Report on the morning of 11-1, which I can link to. But what was your take on the first and third sets before you go through the second set?
So this was my first Halloween show. And my first time at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. The last time I'd seen Fish in Vegas was 04, which I think you and I both shared that.
Yeah.
And, man, that was a very different one. first and third sets, so I kind of had a feeling of what to expect going in. I'd seen a couple New Year's shows, and I'd listened, obviously, to all the Halloween shows in the past. And, you know, the first set for Halloween always seems to vary wildly between, like, your 10/31/95 or your 10/31/2010, where they really try to, like, up the Halloween theme, and your 10/31/2013, where, like, they obviously have a lot to get off their chest, and they're a little bit nervous going into the second set, and it's a little bit more subdued. And I thought this was a little bit of a mix between the two of those. I was really happy to catch a Buried Alive. I think it was only the third time I'd ever seen that. I thought Ghost got into a really beautiful, soaring, blissful jam almost immediately, and
yeah,
proved to kind of be the first, you know, legitimate jam of the run. I liked the segue into Crazy Sometimes, and liked to see them playing around in unique spots for Paige and Mike's songs, just because they kind of always seem to be, like, slotted in there. It was good to have, like, be a flowing part of the set. Haley's, the jam out of Haley's, I'm always looking for a second jam Haley's. I thought that was really good.
It was really good. That was a solid Haley's.
Yeah, I mean, I need to go back and immediately listen to that. The thing I've listened to the most from this show was set two, which we'll get into. But,
yeah.
I remember really liking it. And even Ocelot, I mean, I'm an Ocelot lover, man. I have no problems with it. Like, the closest thing I've ever heard from Fish to the Grateful Dead. And
yeah,
I just, like, had a very groovy, bluesy swing to it. And I loved it. And then first tube to close out with the curtain dropping. I mean, I thought at the end of the first set, there was good energy. There were some good jams. Perhaps the set list could have been a little bit more above the top, but I also felt like that was a reflection of they've got this huge second set lined up, and they kind of just want to, like, ease into that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the third set, I mean, there was some great jamming in the third set, including, of course, the Set Your Soul Free and a Tweezer and a song I Heard the Ocean Sing. Those are a great little segment. I think we heard that was sort of a theme throughout the weekend, was just a lot of really big, long jams. I think there was, you know, like a 20-minute jam all four nights, or close to 20 anyway, which was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I go to Phish now, you know, for, obviously I love the friends I get to see there, I love the vibe of the shows, I love the way that everything just kind of moves and flows on a night-to-night basis, but for me, I mean, the biggest walk away from a show is going to be, you know, improvisation that takes me on kind of a musical journey, takes the crowd with them, and I thought every single night had something like that. And the song I Heard the Ocean Sing, man, like, Trey was just looking up the crowd page side and just like soaring on his guitar, and it ended up being a huge theme that we would get over the next three nights. He put so much into building, you know, very thematic riffs, beautiful melodies into just a totally peaking jam that happened over and over and over again, and that was kind of the first moment where I was like, oh my god, Trey's on right now.
Yeah. And so, well, Brian, we don't have to, I mean, I think there's been tons of talk about the second set in terms of whether people thought it was great or not great. And I was surprised and confused the whole time and laughing. And but I've gone back now and listened to that set, I don't know, three or four times. And there's two or three songs that I think are worth hearing again, you know, and it was very entertaining, but super weird. I mean, I'm just curious your take on like the enduring legacy of that set and any other thoughts you have on it.
Sure. It's probably the most excited I've been about something that Phish has done since, I would say, Dix 2012. Just in the sense that it really feels like a new step forward for the band. You know, I don't want to talk down in any way about the Baker's Dozen, because I think that that was an amazing, amazing moment. But I feel if there's any slight thing I could say, and I know I'm stepping on very, very hallowed ground here, so that felt like an achievement reached, and it felt like a celebration of everything that Phish had done to that point, whereas this felt like another turn to the future. I felt that same way walking out of Dix 2012, where it was like, okay, they've rediscovered how to communicate improvisationally, and that's putting them in a position going forward that means we're in for some really exciting and challenging music going forward. And we were in 2013 2015 2017. I kind of had a feeling going into 2018 that we needed another moment like that, and I didn't know where it was going to come, and for much of the summer I didn't think it was going to come. That was the moment where I felt like they've shifted into the future. I loved the zaniness of the lyrics. You know, I loved that we were getting back into Phish territory, where the songs kind of have like this mindless absurdity to them, but then like you get these little wormholes of lines. You know, this is what space smells like. Mm-hmm. We have come to outlive our brains. You know, death don't hurt very long. I mean, these like song titles and riffs and lines of the songs that like I heard everybody singing and screaming. I heard the band singing and screaming along to in various jams the next three nights. I mean, I think that there's just something in these songs that is going to take us forward with Phish in a really profound and interesting way. I'm very excited to see how they develop with it.
Yeah, I agree. The Say It To Me Santos is sort of the crown jewel, I think, of it, just because of the goofiness and the lyrics and the repetition of it, you know? That's the one that Miles is already singing over and over, so that's the way I can tell that, you know? So I
took my dad to the show, and he was blown away by the whole, oh my god, is this a band that I've never heard of, to, oh my god, they actually wrote this and they tricked everyone, holy crap. And then during Santos, he was like standing, arms raised, screaming out, I will always remember where I was. And I was like, you get it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if we're going to play a little clip here for the first night before we move on to the second, what should we listen to? You think we should listen to a jam from the third set or play some of one of the cover songs?
I'm going to go with one of the cover songs.
Cool.
I really love the song, We Are Come to Outlive Our Brains.
Cool.
and I loved how they worked it into Harry Hood on 11-1, and mm-hmm. it's just a song that's really stuck with me from the time. So I'd love to hear that a little bit.
Okay, we're going to get into that, and I will tell people that if they want to hear more about like our thoughts on, you know, the set itself, you should check out the Couch Report video that we did from the Brooklyn Bowl, because we had a long conversation, and I think the biggest takeaway is just like, Phish did something crazy again, you know, and they continue to surprise us. And the fact that they covered a fake album from a band they made up, which basically just means they wrote a new album, it's just insane, man. So let's listen to a little bit of that song now.
Slow it down. Come to outlive our brains. Fluid distance as I frown. We will come to outlive our brains. I see you in the distance as I frown. We will come to outlive our brains. I see you in the distance as I frown. We will come to outlive our brains.
All right, so we are come to outlive our brains, Brian, so thank you for helping us discover that. Brian, one thing I thought was interesting, we got to see this show together, and where we were together and we were apart, as happens. We talked before about like some bust outs, and I think the last two nights had more bust outs. This show like almost really didn't have any, besides like a 40 show gap for I've Been Around, but there's a lot of stuff here that we'd heard in 2018 a lot, but that didn't really take away from the show because of the way it started, man. That Everything's Right jam was, I don't remember how long exactly, but really strong start into AC/DC bag, which was just really good 1-2 combo to get the show started. And the energy was just, I felt like the energy was maybe a little bit clearer that night because people weren't focused on the Halloween thing. Did you feel that?
I did. I mean, I have like two immediate thoughts about that show that really stuck out to me. I mean, number one, and I wrote about this a little bit in the review I wrote for Phish.net. Is,
yeah, which we'll link to that too.
Yeah. 11-1 shows, they're very rare. I think they've only played four or five of them in their career. And the only other date I can compare them to is New Year's Day, and there's just this like release from the two big Phish holidays whenever they play a show on those dates. I think that 11-1 is really interesting though, because you see them immediately picking up and using these sounds that they've been toying around with in rehearsals and in sound checks, however, you know, whenever they're writing these songs, but they're not really employing them. Well, if they are, they're in subtle ways that we don't really understand at the time. So I always feel like on November 1st, they feel this like freedom, to like make new music in a way. And, I felt that immediately with the Everything's Right. The other thing I thought was, to your point, not a lot of bust outs that night. One thing I'd asked for, before the tour started, I kind of put it out on Twitter, was, I want to see them really focus on exploring new songs. And that's part of the reason I love this new record so much, is because it's new songs to continue exploring on. I think that that's the avenue forward for Phish.
Mm-hmm.
To get Everything's Right, to go big in the immediate, you know, first slot of the show, but then the second set to open up with a 20-minute blaze on, a really excellent contained but somewhat exploratory No Man in No Man's Land, and then Fuego, all three of those in a row to kick off the second set. I mean, that to me is Phish embracing this new songwriting and using those songs in the biggest spots for their fan base.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that was so clear from the Everything's Right opener. All those jams were so good. And Trey has loved Twist this tour. That was only a 2-show gap between they played it the last night in Chicago and then the second night in Vegas. So they've been playing it a lot. And I think maybe two or three other times on the tour. So he's loving to go into that. But this was a pretty good and long version. It wasn't like, I was sort of expecting that night to be kind of like one of those Saturday shows or second night shows where it's like Trey's just trying to find a groove and keeps going into different songs after 6 or 7 minutes.
Right.
But that didn't really happen here.
Yeah, that twist got into it was like a demented carousel for a second. It was so bizarre. Like whatever Paige was doing on the organs, and they had this like driving beat. And I really thought for a small second when Trey got to the microphone and started singing, that they were going into Catapult. And,
I got
pretty excited for that because we haven't heard that in a long, long time. But I still loved where the jam went. I mean, it was original. It was very fresh. And it was kind of one of those fish moments where you're like, what in the hell are they doing right now? And I love that sort of stuff. Like that just kind of like keeps me on my toes throughout the show. And then to go into Caspian and come back out, I mean, second time, it's been a sandwich twist in two shows, basically. I mean, that's kind of rare and unique as well.
Yeah. And the hood that just closed the second set, very like, you know, not traditional hood, but really, really nice and a really good jam in that hood. I felt like the energy of this show from the band was kind of, it just never really let up.
Yeah. I feel like this show, it had an incredibly solid set list. I don't think there's a lot of moments that you could really complain about, even like a bouncing in the late, you know, part of the second set. I couldn't really complain about it because it just was a little needed to take a deep breath at that point.
Yeah, I loved that. I loved that break.
Yeah, it was good. It was really, I mean, it was nice. It was like a palate cleanser. Mm-hmm. That Harry hood really reminded me of a lot of the excellent versions we got from 2014,
mm-hmm.
When they were just jamming it like crazy. I mean, stepping back into the first set, you know, Chalk Dust Torture coming in a slot where it could very easily just, you know, rock for 7 minutes and we move on to the next song. And it sounded like it was going to. I mean, I think that they finished the song and
yeah.
then went into
they totally finished
really
it.
Remarkable
yeah.
jam segment. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. You're right. And that was, it totally felt like they were finishing it. It's a good point. And the contact, I mean, it might have just been my state of mind, but like I thought that was so cool. Like they were so, I don't know. They just everyone just seemed so happy. You know, the band, the audience. It was a nice like you said, sort of release from the night before, and the contact with everyone waving. It was really cool. And I actually thought you mentioned this in the review, the Rise Come Together. I thought that was a pretty good second song closer. It was you know, unexpected, but I really like that. I really like that song, and Trey obviously enjoys playing it.
Yeah, I think it. It just kind of it sounds like kind of a late era Beatles song in a lot of ways, and I love the riff that goes into it. I like the peak on it. I mean, I've seen it now two or three times, and it's really grown on me, especially this tour. I thought during Contact, and it ties immediately back to the Halloween set. You know, Contact to me felt like this. Connecting piece between these new, really bizarre, really zany fish songs. I mean, at the end of the day, Contact is like as ridiculous of a song as any band could ever write and perform for 20,000 people, but it works every time.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, like these new songs feel in some cases in the spirit of that, you know, just like that fish sense of humor.
Well, I think someone might have mentioned this online, but maybe I was just thinking about it. But either way, if you think that like the songs from the second set of the first night were too weird and too goofy and like you didn't like them, and just think about it when you hear Contact, you know?
Yeah, and then like, you know, Cavern, and you know, I was like there were so many songs that came throughout the remainder of the run where I was like, oh yeah, this is like in the spirit of the Halloween set.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point in terms of the theme. So Brian, what should we play from the second night? There's a lot to choose from here.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with that twist. Cool. I love that that jam segment where they kind of get this like weird, distorted, dystopian space, and then Trey and Mike start singing, and it's beautiful and really bizarre and kind of everything I love from Fish.
Sweet.
Thank you.
cool. Hope you guys enjoyed that twist. So we're going to jump to the third night now. Brian, you texted me after the third night, which I guess was yesterday, and said that this might have been one of the best shows you've ever seen. Now that you have 30 hours later and a little bit, and another Fish show under your belt, do you still feel that way about the third night, 11-2?
100%. I think it might be the best. I mean, it had literally everything I've ever wanted from a Fish show. I've seen a lot of really good shows from them over the last couple of years. So obviously time could change my immediate lust and infatuation, but I think it will hold up. I mean, the crowd came out that night in a way that I've rarely seen. The band responded with, you know, Cavern Opener is always a huge way to open it, to open a show. So rare that they do it. And that song just brings so much energy. If I could, you know, first time in over 4 years, first time seeing it.
That's amazing.
And that, like, when it started, you know, they got like a kind of applause, you know, just like throughout the room. And then it was as if everybody realized after like the first two lines, and there was this groundswell of cheers that went around the room. And I think, the band really responded. I don't know if that came through on the webcast or on any of the tapes, but you could hear it as, you know, people recognized that we were hearing If I Could. And I loved that moment. Sand, Back on the Train were really, really classic, great peaking jams, great ways to keep the momentum going, even if they weren't as surprising as, you know, If I Could. And then Mercury. I mean, I don't know if I need to reiterate it here, but I mean, Mercury is my favorite song of 3.0. That's my favorite song that the band's written since Scent and Subtle Sounds, and probably one of my favorite songs of the last 20 years, and one of my favorite Fish songs ever. And I'd never seen a 20-plus minute first set jam. So to get that combined and to have them work as hard as they did for that jam was one of the most satisfying and just incredible things I've ever experienced with a band live.
That's really cool. Yeah, it was. It reminded me of like a multi-segment Chuck Does Torture or something, the way it just continued to evolve.
Yeah, it was like, even when it sounded like they were stopping and going into Taste, once Trey, you know, started playing the Nets Unbreakable line and kind of distorting that and moving into different keys, and then they built off of that, the jam just felt relentless. And I mean, it could have really kept going. There's a groove that they start up after it peaks for about the last minute and a half, and they decided to wind it down and go into Susie. But I mean, it was kind of just one of those moments where, and I'm not complaining about this, I have no complaints about it whatsoever, but it was one of those moments where it was like they just couldn't stop. Like, it just kept on going.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. I'm glad you got it. And then the Susie to close out the set was, you know, just, you couldn't complain at that point, as it's a nice high energy closer. So going into set break, you already knew that you'd seen, you know, one of your favorite shows. The second set was, what, there were six songs with like a sort of strangely placed mid-set Gaiuti, but a lot of jamming around that too.
Yeah, I feel like the only kind of comparable shows I can make that I've seen are 8/31/12 and 8/31/18 in terms of like set one finishes and you're like, I don't know if I even need a second set. And then the second set starts and you're like, holy crap, they continued on this level. They kept going and in some cases reached higher. I mean, you had to know Soul Plant was coming. And you know, it's it always leads to a big jam, and I thought the jam was fantastic. Down with Disease, I like that they've been. I'm one to never complain about a Down with Disease, but I like that they've been playing it less. If that makes sense, just kind of keep people guessing, some other songs. You know, I thought it got to a really cool jam segment. The Oye Como Va jam was great, and what Kuroda was doing with the lights during that section. The whole place was going insane. That was my first Gaiuti in 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And while I agree with you, I don't know if it exactly fit in that slot. I kind of throw it in there as like the Alaska slot in the Fuck Your Face show that like I could have gone with another song, but like it's one of those nights I'm just going to let the band roll with it because they're on such a high.
Of course, yeah, it makes sense.
Definitely some rust, but like I was excited to see it. And then the show ended with Sneaking Sally, I thought was the biggest call of the night. At that point they could have gone into something very standard and they decided to keep it going, and you end it with Sally Light. Light just was relentless. Some of the best hose jamming, some of the best lead guitar playing I've heard from Trey in all of 3.0. Very reminiscent of the version from Dix this year, as well as the Undermine from Dix 2012.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Absolutely gorgeous Slave to Close. And then the encore was just like this solidification from the band and the crowd that, yeah, we just saw a great show. Like when Trey told us that this felt like an old show, I got like, I just couldn't stop smiling. Like, you know, so it's moments like that that you're always searching for.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and it's to have the band acknowledge that too is rare too.
Yeah. It's so rare that they tell you that they like what they just did.
Right. Right. Know? Right. Yeah.
Like so many nights they just like wave at you, say thanks, and then they walk off the stage. I mean, we got a thank you so fucking much from Fishman and a Trey, you know, tonight feels like an old show. I mean, that's, you want the band to feel that way as much as you want us to feel that way, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, and the first bike in 3 years, with some Fishman dancing, a lot of interesting stuff in that show. I'm glad you enjoyed it. What should we play some of the Mercury?
Yeah, why don't we do that? Kind of that jam when they come back out of silence. So there's some really good stuff in there.
Cool. All right, guys, you heard Brian talk about the third night and how much he loved it. I hope you enjoyed that, Mercury, if you hadn't heard it yet. The fourth night, another night of Fish, crazy. We had another another big bust out from last night, Brian, night four, but some other highlights as well. How did you feel about last night compared to the other three or just coming out of the night before?
Yeah. So I realized that when I was in Vegas that this was my first four-night Fish run since New Year's 2012, and I was a much younger, not a dad yet, man.
right.
So I could handle it. I definitely found that like chilling out between like 2 and 5 o'clock in the afternoons was so critical. Taking a little bit of a nap, like to get yourself through it. So I kind of went into the show probably, you know, a little burnt out, a little tired, but ready for whatever the band was going to do. I was a little on the fence in terms of what they were going to come with because, you know, tour finales have been either really good in the last couple of years or kind of, you know, pedestrian and mediocre, and like they try to almost play too much. I felt like they came out the gates a little bit more low key and a little bit more just kind of subdued than the night before, or even, you know, 11-1. And I think after what they gave on November 3rd, I was totally understandable. Rogue, you know, hit me immediately. That was really pretty. The Tube was really the first moment, though, in the show where I was like, okay, they're yeah. still searching for something. They're still searching for these, you know, very blissful peaks. You know, that to me was an overall highlight of the entire run and of the entire tour. And I don't think I've ever heard a Tube that's anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not your average sort of jammed out Tube, which is a good thing, I think, in the grand scheme of things. But they have been jamming it out recently with the last two or three versions, which is, I know, welcome for a lot of people who've been waiting for that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I, the only version I can compare it to personally is the Powdered Night, version. Just it completely left the funk jam behind and somehow returned to it. I don't know how it did, but somehow it did.
And, what else in the first set? Cause you had a pretty, like there were a lot of songs, which was sort of in contrast to the other nights in some ways, I guess. The Mike's Groove to close it out, but with the Life Boy in the middle is that, man, who doesn't like want to hear a Life Boy?
Yeah, to get two rare hoist ballads back to back was not something I was asking for nor expecting before I came into this run, and ended up being one of my favorite things about the run. I mean, the Mike's was very contained compared to the Nashville version, but I thought it was really, really strong, really high. I mean, Mike's is one of those songs that when it starts, if you're in the venue, you're like, oh, I know exactly why this band plays this all the time, even if they don't explore it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like the place just goes insane. Life Boy was a really nice, you know, come down a la I Am Hydrogen, but the added bonus that it was a, you know, we hadn't heard it in 2 years at that point. I think it was my first time hearing it since Vegas 04, so that was really cool.
Nice.
And then Weak Pog is just like, I was thinking when I was watching, you know, the first couple rows dancing during that, and there's a video on YouTube of the March 30th, 1992 version of Weak Pog where they're playing in like some club in Columbia, Missouri. And like the bounce that the crowd has at that show was the exact same as a bounce at every other Weak Pog that I've ever seen. And it's just like one of those perfect, you know, little fish moments where everybody knows how to dance to it. Everybody's as happy as can be. And, I don't know. I loved it.
So that's awesome. And the good way is to obviously, you know, end the first set.
Yeah.
And then the second set, the last set of the four night run, you got obviously a great combo, a Carini, which is not super surprising. That seems to be like one of the go-tos now, you know, which I would take over a Down With Disease second set opener. I'd take that any day. And into 46 Day, there was, according to, you know, the fish.net set list, no pauses between any songs in the second set. Carini, 46 Days, yeah, Sense, yeah, Cross-Eyed, yeah. 2001 Possum, Melt. So you mentioned Sense and Subtle Sounds before. I don't know exactly. I think this is probably in the top two or three longest versions, or maybe not. It was only 15 minutes, right? But it was up there, at least since the return too.
Yeah, I think it was up there with The Man as the longest since The Return.
Since The Return, okay.
Man 2015. Mm-hmm. I think there was a Deer Creek, Camden, and another Camden versions from 2003 and 2004 that were longer. But I thought this was the most exciting version that they've played since they returned. I love, and this is absolutely no disrespect to the version that was played at The Man in 2015, unbelievable jam. I just thought that this, I mean, to have Sense and Subtle Sounds go into a, you know, modulate and then go into this like blissful peak jam that had nothing to do with the Sense and Subtle Sounds theme, and then go unfinished in the cross-side. I was fully locked into that. That was as good as anything that was played the previous two nights.
Yeah, so did you feel like that was sort of the peak of the set, or how did you feel like the set kind of unfolded?
I thought it was a really interesting set in the sense that, you know, there was a sense like they go into 2001 and Possum, which are, again, similar to Mike's. Like, if you see those songs live or like Character Zero, you're like, oh, yeah, I get why the band plays this. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't come through fully on the webcast or when you're listening back. I thought those were great. I thought, like, you know, we were in for like a kind of standard wind down, as I've seen a lot in like tour closers in the last few years. To have them then go into Split Open and Melt, which I fully expected Possum to close that set, and the Split Open and Melt do what it did, and go into as blissful and gorgeous of a period of music as you've heard from that song, that was probably my overall set highlight and may have been one of the top two or three highlights for me of the entire run.
Nice. That's awesome. That they had another amazing long and winding Split Open and Melt this tour, but they don't, you know, and I think that was to close out the second set as well. Right? That was just a few shows.
Hampton, that's where I was there.
Was awesome.
I mean, this added to a very hot year for Split Open and Melt. I mean, the Gorge had an incredible version. I think Camden had a really solid version. Hampton, I might be forgetting another one, but then this version to close out, you know, at least the touring portion of the year.
Yeah, the Gorge one was great too, but there's not that many of them.
It's a song that I feel like has been really controversial and really like heavily explored by the band throughout all of 3.0, and I'm really happy that they've been able to push through what like were just kind of wall of sound and dissonant jams in 2009, 10, 11, 12, even into 13. This for me joined SPAC 2013, 7/6/2013 as the most interesting version that's been played in all 3.0.
That's awesome. That's the one you're talking about is the SPAC one, right?
Yeah, SPAC set one closer.
Yeah, that, like, I love that one. Yeah, I
do too.
Really cool. And this song has not been played in the first set since 2016, which is kind of crazy to think about, but so you get a long sense, and I think you know, one of the longest sense of 3.0, and then one of the longest and craziest melts of 3.0, and then there's all this other stuff happening too. It's like it seemed like they probably didn't. I know Trey mentioned the night before, right, that they didn't want the run to end, or maybe that was the show we were at on the first one of those nights. He said, "We wish this tour could go on forever," which probably felt like it, right?
Yeah, your fan base does too.
Yeah, exactly. So Brian, what we can let people you know, off the hook here on a jam, which you should tell us what to play for the last one. And then before we go to the music, though, I think we should get your takeaway on, you know, the whole run. Any couple thoughts that you have on sort of the overall run and sort of how this leaves 2018 before we get into the New Year's run?
Yeah, I think, I think it was a very, 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 very high quality run. I think the only other run I've ever attended that this can compare to is, or the only other runs I would say is Dick's 2012 Magna Ball and the second weekend of the Baker's Dozen. And I'm inclined to say that this was the best of them all from a musical output, from a shock value, from overall band playing. I mean, I feel very grateful to have experienced these last four nights with the band and to have seen them really push themselves and evolve. And I mean, I think going back to what we were talking about for the 10/31 show, the thing that gets me most excited right now is I think that they turned a corner towards whatever the future holds for them. And, you know,
yeah,
more than anything else in this, you know, almost 10-year 3.0 incarnation of the band, I just want them to continue pushing forward. You know, a show like Halloween and a run like this reinforces to me that I don't think they're breaking up anytime soon. I don't think they're going to take a break anytime soon. I think that they're still creatively energized, and I think it shows. So I'm just very excited, very filled with a ton of gratitude, very happy. I met and saw a bunch of really good people this weekend, and I got 4 days away from normal life and responsibilities that was very, very needed. So on the whole, I'm just, I'm on a high about kind of what I just experienced and what I feel like the band just experienced as well, and the whole community itself.
Yeah, for sure. And it's an interesting place. Vegas is just a weird, weird city, but Phish seems to have really great, for with the exception of the 2004 shows, really great track record at Vegas.
They do.
I assume that they're not staying, you know, in the same place as we are. And I assume they get some time, downtime, and they chill with their families by the pool and the things you were talking about to recharge and all that. Cause it seems like they enjoy it there. It's not like it's too overwhelming for them. But, so one thing I just, I want to add to what you said, I agree with you. And I think you know, if you had told me, like, when I was at the Hampton 2009 shows that, you know, 9 years later, I would see a Halloween show that would be, like, basically the third original album that they had written in 5 years, and that they would, you know, cover a fake album of new songs, there's no way I would have believed you, you know? I thought that they would come back and play a few years and, like, you know, become sort of a legacy act. And it's incredible, 35 years in their career, that they're like actually kind of hitting creative peaks. I mean, you can say what you will about the songs, and you know, they probably aren't like the best songs they've written, but creative peak in terms of just the imagination and the balls to do it, you know?
The desire to spend that time together and like that time working through ideas and shelving bad ideas or shelving ideas that don't work for now, and, you know, crafting a song together and then, you know, having this thematic backstory. I mean, that's not your everyday, you know, rock and roll band in 2018. And, you know, that's why I referenced Dick's 2012 so much in our conversation, because that was the moment in those first 4 years of 3.0 where it was like, okay, they're no longer going to be a legacy act. Like, they really want to push forward and see what they can do, and they're ready to step up their game. And that had so many of the fan base, you know, so excited about what was next. And we saw 2013, you know, that fall tour was incredible. We got a new album out of that. We got, you know, 2015 was such a joyous year, such a joyous tour, Magna Ball, you know, and then the Baker's Dozen, you know, all these like big peaks that came that I think are directly tied to that turn that they made, that shift in late 2012. You know, who knows what we're going to be talking about over the next 5-6 years here with Phish.
Right.
But I've got to imagine it's all directly tied to kind of this moment. I mean, I feel like this was a big shift and a next step forward for the band, and I hope I'm not wrong.
Me too. Well, I'm glad you got to see all these shows, and I will, you know, I will welcome you back into regular life with me. What do you want to play from the last night, Brian?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, I've talked a lot about just feeling really grateful and feeling just really just happy to have experienced this and just filled with like a lot of love after experiencing all this. So I think the jam that best encapsulates that feeling from last night was the Sense and Subtle Sound. The peak that it got to was just another moment of celebration, and I felt like they left it all on the field, you know, at that point in time. So I think that would be a great way to send people off here into the next 2 months of No Phish before the New Year's run.
Yeah, right, let's do it. And thanks, Brian, for joining us. And I know you guys from On Beyond the Pond will be exploring a jam or two from the last several shows, so people should look out for that probably in the next week or so, right?
Yeah, well, we're going to try to get it out towards the end of this week. We've already been kind of texting and have a couple ideas cooking up. And we are not at any sort of like a, you know, We have a lot to choose from, is I guess what I should say. There's almost too much to choose from. I feel like we should have 10 episodes on this, but
right, yeah, definitely.
We'll be releasing it shortly.
Cool. All right, well, keep up the good work, and thanks for joining.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me on. This is great.